This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Trained to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Trained to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Seth, you were talking a couple segments ago about we were talking about the, you know, young players in their off seasons and how the first one they're getting ready for the draft, and how the second one you got money in your pocket and free time for the first time in a long time, and the third one is where you really start to calibrate a little bit. We're seeing that with CJ a little bit. You know, he's been off the grid this off season, which I think has been a good thing. You talked about you were playing video games your first full off season as a pro with some money in your pocket after your rookie year.
Yeah.
But you called the console a game station, and that caught
game
people's
station.
Attention.
Listen.
Did old man Sethers just say he had a game station?
I did. Yeah, I pulled the classic, like, yeah, you're on Face Watch,
I'm on
right?
the book or, face, yeah.
I'm on a Twitter. Yeah.
But I don't think
I wanted to say gaming console, and then I thought it was a PlayStation. I got stuck somewhere in the middle. I couldn't remember what I had.
It had to be 1998, right? 1997, 98, somewhere in there. Okay, yeah. I'm trying to think of what the big gaming stations were at that point.
But
It would have been a PlayStation.
It would have been a PlayStation.
Okay, gotcha.
If it wasn't an N64, it would have been a PlayStation.
Look at Ben coming in.
N64.
Ben coming in.
I was making $131,000 a year. You think I was messing with an N64? Or was that more expensive than a PlayStation?
Who knows?
I don't remember.
Okay. Who knows? I just love Ben swooping in off the top rope and setting us straight on the gaming consoles of the time.
I gave it to Goodwill. So I was playing it too much.
Did you get the receipt?
Like, what am I turning into? What a piece of crap.
Did you get the receipt? From the Goodwill people?
I didn't know anything about that then. I didn't know I could deduct my charitable expenses
and
claim them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You've learned since then, though, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know if it was Goodwill or Salvation Army.
Sure.
Don't fact check me on this.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Don't do a public record search, okay?
Listen, IRS. Yeah. Will Anderson Jr. met with the media yesterday. Will, have you moved on from the playoff loss to the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, I haven't moved on from it at all. I was just talking to my coach about it today. That feeling, like, now that you know how close you are to almost being in the Super Bowl, it hits a little differently, you know? And for us, I'm like, bro, we almost there. When I broke it down to them, I was like, bro, we're almost there. Like, we have to have that intensity every game, no matter where we at, no matter how we get on the field, no matter if we start, you know, on defense first, like, we have to bring that energy every time. And never forget that feeling, bro. Like, I've been telling people I have to keep my composure, bro, because I'm just so excited for next year and what this team can do and what we can go and how far we can go, man. And I know we got all the right pieces to do it, and we just got to keep building that connection. And Coach D'Amico hit it on the head today in the team meeting, man. The connection is everything. When your players trust you, when your coaches trust you, man, everybody has the same goal. Everybody can go out there and ball. Coaches can get what they want. Players can get what they want, man. And the ultimate goal is to get the Super Bowl.
Dude, he's a coach's dream right there, man.
Yeah.
Here's everything D'Amico said in the meeting, and I believe every word of it. We're going to the Super Bowl.
He's a coach or a military commander.
He's awesome, man. I just love him so much.
Will walks in the door indoctrinated.
Yes.
He is ready to go. He is the guy that coaches talking. He's like, yeah, good.
Do you
give me that quote about the lion in the prairie in the morning, waking up and all that? Yeah,
that's it.
Chasing the gazelle. Yeah.
How close are they? Are they as close as Will implies in that cut right there?
Well, like, okay. Now, the Chiefs game is an interesting one because they were going slug for slug with the Chiefs
absolutely.
For three quarters.
Yeah.
And the defense was doing some really, really good things. They had a couple lapses in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's a classic scenario we've seen, including with Lovie Smith's defenses at times, where the defense can only hold up for so long. You can't expect the defense to shut down the other team's offense drive after drive after drive. I think they're close in that because their defense turns the ball over, creates turnovers, and because they are there, that is a Super Bowl caliber defense. Mm-hmm. You don't look at that defense and think, oh yeah, that's what limited them from going to a Super Bowl.
It's gotten better this offseason, at least personnel wise. Yeah.
And I think offensively in that game, you saw the glimpses of maybe what they could do. That first drive in the second half was a very, very impressive drive. Yeah. Even as, remember, the Texans shot themselves in the foot twice on that drive with penalties. And still just drove 89 yards down the field, or however many it was. So, and the score was close until the fourth quarter, but then in the fourth quarter, the offense fell apart so spectacularly that I think it felt further away than it actually was. And that if you can just get competent offensive line play, that's a different game. Some of the things need to improve, it's not like all of a sudden you need an infusion of seven all pros to turn it around. You've got the quarterback, you've got one wide receiver, and then I think Christian Kirk is a very viable pro if he can stay healthy. It's just getting competent offensive line play that would make a huge difference.
Well, and specifically, you know, you talk about the offense collapsing. It was the offensive line and CJ getting sacked and them not being able to, you know,
CJ being frazzled by that point too.
Correct.
I think CJ, the clock in his head was destroyed by the fourth quarter.
Absolutely, no question. And so the whole thing. So I think when you're, you know. I think Will Anderson is going to believe about anything this team can do at large with the whole team. Like, you look at it and you go, okay, well, the one area that really failed us in that playoff game, they are showing tremendous urgency right now in trying to change that area too.
Yeah.
You know, like we'll see.
They tore it down and now they've kind of half built it up, but the draft will be a big indication
of
how aggressive they're being.
Yeah. They're not sitting on their hands going, just hoping that group of five is going to get better next year. You know, they're showing great urgency with that. More from Will Anderson, talking about the defense, and they're bringing back almost everybody on defense, right? I mean, they upgraded at safety, I would say, with C.J. Gardner-Johnson back there. Even E.J. Speed over what they had in the on the depth chart at linebacker is probably a slight upgrade there. Continuity with the defense. Here's Will Anderson Jr. on that.
Yeah, those guys are cornerstones for our defense, you know what I'm saying? And they bring a lot of juice, a lot of excitement to the defense, and their playmaking abilities, you know, it show up every Sunday, Thursday, whenever we play. And those are guys that we love having in the building, man. And I'm excited to keep rolling with them. I'm excited what they're going to do, man. And, you know, the work don't stop. They're the same guys. No matter how much money they make, they're going to go out there and make plays and make sure that they're making the guys around them, you know, holding them accountable as well and going out there and doing our jobs.
And obviously talking about Jalen Petrie and Derek Stingley Jr. there.
Yeah. You know what, too? And D'Amico had mentioned Dino Vasso, the defensive backs coach, in his press conference yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we probably have maybe under-discussed the work that he's done with a very young secondary. Yeah. You had last year the secondary doing some really good things where Kalen Bullock's a rookie, Kamari Lazard is a rookie, Derek Stingley's still a young player, Jalen Petrie's in a new role as a young player.
Mm-hmm.
Dino Vasso was here before D'Amico got here.
Yeah.
He's done some really good work with those guys, and I think the culture in that room is really good. I think those guys are all just football junkies. So I don't... Yeah, I think the culture is really, really strong on the defensive side of the ball. I think those are the kinds of guys where they're policing themselves already. They've got veterans, you know, including in Jimmy Ward, who I think his leadership element probably is underappreciated because he's not on the field as much as you want. But he is a true veteran player who really cares about football. You got Azeez Alshire at linebacker. You got multiple 30-plus-year-olds on the defensive line that I don't want to say that. I think it's one of those things that hopefully means that D'Amico can focus more on being a complete head coach and not the defensive coordinator,
mm-hmm.
and that he can, you know, problem solve and go where is needed on the offensive side of the ball at times, maybe more so this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. Will Anderson Jr., what's the ceiling for this defense?
Man, my emotions been everywhere. For me, those last two playoff games, like, for me, I'm like, you got to do that every game. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just been my emotions. And I'm like, bro, like, going into this division I see for our team, the vision I see for the defense is, like, the sky's the limit. Like, if we come out balling like that, nobody can touch us. And it starts now. And it's been nice to see everybody in the locker room, everybody being here, even the vets. And that just shows how much they care about the program and where they want to see the program go. And, like, one guy I got to highlight, like, I had my highlight with Azeez last year, C.J. Gardner, man. Like, today was my first day meeting him. and he is everything I knew he would be, like competitive, talk smack, and I love it. And we need those type of guys in the locker room that lighten, you know, to lighten everybody's mood a little bit and show like it's fun, man. Football is fun, and he brings that energy.
Okay. So he met C.J. Gardner-Johnson for the first time yesterday.
And he was fun already. Yeah, he's already having fun with him, and he was talking smack and all that. Yeah, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is an interesting one because he's been with four different teams now and five different stays because he was with the Eagles on two separate occasions.
Yeah.
And you wonder, okay, this is a guy that's been traded and moved around a lot, and he's a high-energy guy, not afraid to mix it up on social media with Taylor Swift fans and what have you. So you wonder, all right, now it's worth mentioning that the reports were that this was not universally that people weren't universally happy in Philadelphia that they got rid of C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Very
there were
polarizing
people on the
move,
staff
yes.
that really wanted to stick on to him. Yeah. But the Eagles are in this position where they're paying some guys. They have to say goodbye to others.
They just it's not paid like their center yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
$20 million or whatever.
So I think that C.J. Gardner-Johnson isn't old at all.
Yeah.
But I think they perhaps thought, okay, maybe there's a shelf life on C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He'll be an interesting one because I think that he might be the classic guy that, man, in the right environment, you see nothing but the best of the guy. And with a little bit of extra maturity, I think that that maybe this is the perfect fit for him. And Gardner Johnson, you know, he was super happy to be traded to the Texans.
Yes.
I think I'm sure he wanted to stay with Philadelphia, but he probably figured, all right, they're paying all these other guys and I'm not the kind of guy maybe that they want to give a 4-year deal. So I'm going to another really good defense with high energy guys. And the Texans are in a mode of like rewarding guys who come there on short term.
They're
contracts.
Paying guys yeah. like that. Absolutely, absolutely.
So it'll be fun. I don't. He's a character. He's a personality.
Yep.
It's true what Will was saying about just you need guys. Sometimes when you want to get a bunch of guys who are grinders and who really care about football and everything, mm-hmm. yeah, there is that tendency sometimes to where you also don't want it to be like this stern. Just boring environment that you need some juice from those guys.
Yes.
Like Kamari's a little bit crazy.
Yep.
Yeah, C.J. Gardner-Johnson's a little bit crazy. Will's crazy in a completely different way. He's like a crazy. He's like one of those back in the day when in the early days of the church, you might have a warrior priest, like one of those the Knights Templar. He's like a Knights Templar.
Okay.
Yeah. But without any of the conspiracy theories, okay, right?
Just a good part of the Knights Templar.
Yeah. He's like a clergy member who also wields a sword. That's how I feel about Will Anderson.
Someone texted in on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line, breathe, Will, breathe.
I know. Oh, I love Will because he's got the same issue I do, especially as a young man. Sometimes you just get so excited that your brain and your emotions outrun your ability to speak, and you got to just consciously slow yourself down a little bit.
I like how excited you and I get when we find out Will Anderson's doing a press conference. Oh, Will's speaking today. Yes.
I'm going to feel better about life after
totally,
this.
Totally, dude. Totally. Mm-hmm. Here was Will. This was a follow-up. He mentions meeting C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and then the follow-up was, what does C.J. Gardner-Johnson bring to this defense?
Yeah, man, that juice. His energy is contagious, and I felt it today while we were running sprints and we were conditioning and stuff like that. He's very competitive, and to play in this defense and to play our style and our brand of ball, you got to be competitive and you got to have a little edge to you, and I think he has all those things.
How competitive do you think Laremy Tunsil was in sprints?
I don't think he ran them, if I had to guess.
You think he, yeah.
He was off to
I know, and honestly, I'll tell you, I know Tony Boselli, people don't have fond memories of him here in Houston because he was beat up and he never played.
Yeah.
But like that was one of the things that impressed me most as a rookie was that, wow, Tony Boselli is out there at 6'7", 335 pounds, winning every wind sprint and caring about it.
Yep.
You know, like it's having veterans that actually like it's not just that they put on a good display. It's like Andre Johnson would win every wind sprint, you know. Probably helps being able to run a 10-200 meter dash, but
he doesn't have to win every wind sprint.
Right,
and he
right,
does,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Andre could have been in cruise mode at various times, but he's the kind of guy that wants to win every wind sprint. So having as many vets as possible that actually give a damn about that stuff it's a good example to set for the young guys.
We'll hear one more from Excited Will in just a second. Text message. I saw Titus got the memo and showed up to voluntary workouts, LOL. Yeah, they had a video of several of the guys coming into the building yesterday like they do on social media, and Titus was one of them. Was Titus
there was a picture on Instagram. Somebody, I think Landry sent it to me, said that he looked like he was in pretty good shape. So
yeah, he
whereas
okay.
Last year he showed up at training camp last year and he looked gigantic.
Yeah. Yeah,
he looked like one of the larger planets.
He was coming off
maybe
knee surgery.
Not quite Jupiter, but pretty damn big.
right. Somewhere Mars, maybe somewhere in there. He was coming off knee surgery, not to retroactively stick up for him. Like, he should have been in better shape. I think he's admitted he should have been in better shape last year.
Well, but I mean, honestly, that's part of professionalism, though, too.
Yeah.
Like, you learn in the NFL, if you're
no
for
excuse.
The big guys, if you're after a surgery, lose weight.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be working out as much and just, you know, take some of the pressure off your joint
yes.
as you're coming back, that whatever you do, don't get fatter. Because then it's like not only are you trying to rehab, but you're rehabbing in a catabolic state while your body's like diminishing itself instead of building.
Yep. Here's Will Anderson Jr. on the return of Sheldon Rankins.
Man, I was so excited, man. Like, I mean, it's awesome. He, like, they put his locker right back next to mine, and I looked up, and I sent him a picture. I was like, bro, we're so back, bro. Like, that's my dog, bro. Like, he was such a, like, great mentor and great help for me my rookie year, man. And, you know, to have him back here again, I'm excited, and I can't wait to go ball with him again.
That's my dog.
I always felt the dynamic between Sheldon Rankins and Will Anderson, the way I like to imagine it, was from the old cartoons of Spike. And
yeah.
the little dog.
Yeah, yeah,
was it
yeah.
Spike was the older dog,
Spike
and there was a little
was
dog that was
dog.
Just always
yeah.
running around and yappy and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, yeah. We got to go chase cars, Spike? We got to go chase cars?
Yeah.
That's Will Anderson. Let's go chase cars. Spike and Tyke are the characters.
Spike and Tyke.
Spike
okay.
and Tyke, yeah. Tyke
would Spike backhand Tyke?
I think maybe. I don't know. Probably not. But Spike was never nearly as excited to go chase cars as little Tyke was. Will Anderson
they were
is
on. That was part of Tom and Jerry, which it tended to feature a lot of violence.
Did it ever. Poor Tom. Yes, it did feature a lot of violence. Yeah, no, you're right. They got the same face as Tom and Jerry.
Spike was big and kind of just didn't speak a lot, kind of grumpy but huge. And then Tyke was just constant. Yep, he would backhand him.
Yeah, that's what I
just
thought.
Saw him. I just
shut up. Yeah. That's what I thought. It's back when you could get away with smacking around people smaller than you in cartoons. back
or
in
my
day.
Human Tyke. Type duck in the face with a shotgun.
Oh my God.
Don't worry, no big deal. He just has to turn his bill around afterwards.
Oh.
I remember you start showing a kid Looney Tunes cartoons and all of a sudden you're like, why is my 3-year-old a sociopath?
Right.
What's going beating the snot out of his Pooh Bear? What's going on here?
No kidding. Why is he chasing ducks and trying to turn their beak around to the back of their head instead of the front of their head? Man, Will Anderson, find somebody who loves you as much as Will Anderson Jr. loves Sheldon Rankins. That would be my advice. If you're out there and you're lonely, find somebody. Play it again, Ben. Like, the excitement in his voice just gets me fired up for this here.
Man, I was so excited, man. Like, I mean, it's awesome. He, like, they put his locker right back next to mine, and I looked up, and I sent him a picture. I was like, bro, we're so back, bro. Like, that's my dog, bro. Like, he was such a, like, great mentor and great help for me my rookie year, man. And, you know, to have
we're
him
so
back,
back
here again, I'm excited, and I can't wait to go ball with him again.
We're so
that
back.
Sounds like a Dumb and Dumber moment. Like, we're so back.
Will Anderson Jr. So you're saying there's a chance? Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. We'll circle back to more Will Anderson a little bit later in the show. Dan Orlovsky had an interesting question, and in light of the draft coming up in a couple of days, and especially this quarterback class is all over the place. Man, I find an article that tells me, like, this is not the year to go find quarterbacks, and then you find another article that says, you know, Jackson Dart is shooting up into the top 10. Like, what's going on here? And I suppose teams, as you point out many times, Seth, like, just because teams are overdrafting guys doesn't mean they're worth a top 10 pick. Right. You know, teams get desperate. Dan Orlovsky had an interesting question that J.J. Watt actually replied to. We'll get to the reply. What's worse or more detrimental, you know, worse slash more detrimental, drafting a QB too early and missing, or paying a free agent QB too much and missing on the free agent QB?
Which is, JJ's got some experience with this.
Well, and JJ's answer surprised me because his experience was with Brock Osweiler is what I first immediately thought of. And I'll hit JJ's answer here as long as we're bringing that up. Thanks to the rookie.
No, I haven't heard it yet, so wait.
Okay. Well, do you want to answer it then, or do you?
I thought we had to go to break. We don't have to?
No.
Oh, no, we're in our long segment. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So, never mind.
I got it under control.
I was getting ready to read my own well.
Yeah.
My own well, lad.
No,
okay.
No. We got 16 more minutes.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read JJ's, or did you want to answer the question?
No, give me his answer.
Okay, I got you. Okay, here we go. Thanks to the rookie wage scale, this is JJ Watt answering Dan Orlovsky's question of what's more detrimental, drafting a quarterback and missing or paying a free agent quarterback and missing. Thanks to the rookie wage scale, you get 4 years of a rookie QB for the same price as 1 year of a high-end free agent quarterback. You hit on the rookie, you've got your franchise quarterback for 10-plus years. If you miss, you start the process over again in 3 years. If a GM misses on a rookie, you can chalk that up to the crapshoot of evaluating college talent. If they miss and overpay a free agent, there's not much of a safety net there. You had plenty of information to evaluate them. Unless you have a Super Bowl-ready roster and there's a free agent QB ready to go like Tom Brady, you'd rather swing and miss on a rookie with potential than swing and miss on an expensive vet. That was an interesting answer to me because the only scenario, well, the scenario that is closest to what the question was for Orlovsky that JJ has experienced was they went and signed Brock Osweiler to a huge free agent deal here, and they got out from under that and drafted Deshaun Watson with no problem the next year.
They got a second-round pick out of it as well.
No, they traded a second-round pick to get rid of
the contract.
Oh, that's
right. They basically paid to trade out Brock Osweiler. You're right. Yes, thank you.
Yep.
I forgot the illegal trade that somehow passed.
Yeah. Groundbreaking.
Shouldn't have been allowed by the NFL.
Yeah.
That's really – that is interesting. I do think that there is this tendency still to feel like – The taking that 1 year hit from a big cap number or whatever just damages or punishes your organization forever. And it's just, it's not as onerous as it seems like it should be. And it is, I mean, it hurts you and you got to work your way through it, but it's not like it makes it impossible to function. So there's an opportunity cost either way. Either you pay for the veteran and it doesn't work out, and then you got to pay to get out from underneath him. I mean, look at the Broncos.
I was just going to bring that up.
The Broncos are never going to recover from this Russell Wilson contract.
In the playoffs
last year. Lo and behold, And they went and they did the same thing the Texans did. They turned around and drafted a quarterback.
Yep.
So I think it's one of those things where there's no hard and fast rule.
Mm-mm.
You gotta. It's case by, especially with quarterbacks, it's just a case-by-case basis and what's the market at the time. When the Texans swung and signed Brock Osweiler, that was really one of the only viable options in free agency. I don't think for a second that Rick Smith or Gary Kubiak really genuinely believed that Brock Osweiler was going to be the guy. But the owner had flat out said, Mr. McNair had flat out said, you know what, we got to find a quarterback. So go ahead. And he gave him the license to go out and sign Osweiler. And then to Bob McNair's credit, he also understood that, hey, it didn't work out. We're just got to move on. And then they drafted Deshaun Watson. So it's not as entertaining an answer, but it depends.
Yeah.
It really just depends.
If I had to pick one, honestly, like drafting the quarterback is the more dangerous one to me because there maybe not as much in recent years as there used to be, but there is a tendency to latch onto that guy and just go, you know, to ride it too long.
They
gave him
possible.
A second contract, you know?
I mean, that's the worst possible thing that happens these days is the rookie. Okay, veteran quarterback, you sign him, doesn't work out. Ah, crap, we got to take a salary cap hit. The problem with a rookie quarterback is, oh, no, what if he shows glimpses in those first 3 years?
Yeah.
And then we extend him because we got to try to We got to gamble on, you're gambling twice.
Yeah.
Because then you're gambling on, okay, is he going to deliver on that upside we've seen?
Yep.
And at that point, then you're screwed both with the money and with the draft pick and the opportunity cost of the time you missed. Yeah, you've swung me over. I say sign Brock Osweiler.
Well, I think it's interesting. Like the Daniel Jones, Trevor Lawrence, if they can't fish Trevor Lawrence out of the grease to turn him into what they think he can be. That is a great point, Seth. The most dangerous out of all of these is the drafted quarterback that teases you just enough to give him a second contract. I'd rather have Zach Wilson, who a year and a half in, this ain't the guy. Or Kenny Pickett with Pittsburgh. Like, okay, we swung, we missed, let's move on. The worst thing that could happen to the Steelers would be that Kenny Pickett just flashes just enough to show them, like, okay, he could be the guy. Like, that's where it gets dangerous when you do both. When you draft the guy and pay the guy.
Those are the quarterbacks. The equivalent is if you're dating somebody and he or she manages to disguise just what a loon and a whack job they are for 3 years. And then you take the plunge and you get married. And 6 months into your marriage, you're like, whoa, what did I sign on for?
Yes.
Not this.
Not this. Yes. Yes.
I didn't even know you had Life 360 on my phone. Yeah. You could have told me at least.
Right. And along those lines, as we're bringing up these names like Kenny Pickett and Trevor Lawrence, boy, yesterday, this is how you know the draft needs to get here, is that the league is at a stage where they're trying to talk themselves into Tyler Shuck now. Kid is at Louisville, and he was at Oregon, and he was at Texas Tech, and now he's the guy who's probably, and I hate this term, this is from Bruce Feldman. This is courtesy of an executive. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic found some opinions from some anonymous executives about this quarterback class and how this quarterback class is not considered a great one. You know, there's a lot of guys that are probably going to, teams are going to overdraft in this draft, it feels like. The quote that got me going is about Tyler Shuck, who's been off the grid until the last week in this draft process. He's probably the most pro-ready to go in and run an offense and be able to operate. Some people bring up his age. He's 26 years old, I think. Nope, don't care. This isn't baseball. You aren't drafting 18-year-olds. He's athletic. He's a good interview.
Yeah, that's great.
Smart, arm talent is good, end quote. That term pro-ready, I'm triggered on it because of this. Remember who the most pro-ready quarterback was in the draft that had Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Lamar Jackson in it, four guys who are starting quarterbacks now in the NFL. It was this guy.
We'll start with the most pro-ready quarterback, and by that we don't just mean guys who get off to a great start, but have a great career. The first nominee, most pro-ready quarterback, is Josh Rosen of UCLA.
Josh Rosen, everything you want in an NFL quarterback. Quick release, flawless effort when he's sitting in that pocket. The one concern in college was when he got pressure, at times he would put the ball up into traffic because he trusts his arm so much. That'll be an area he's going to have to continue to improve.
He's pro-ready. His worst trait is the thing that made Brett Favre the all-time leader in interceptions, but he's pro-ready. I'm like, who else has been labeled pro-ready along the way these last few years? And I find this article. Kenny Pickett described as probably
he was so pro-ready.
The most pro-ready QB in the 2022 draft. Trevor Lawrence might be the most NFL-ready sophomore ever.
That's just dumb based on the offense that he ran.
Yes.
That's really, really dumb. That is that might be the dumbest thing I've heard this decade.
Yeah, that was in 2019 as he was getting ready for his sophomore year. Might be the most NFL-ready sophomore ever. So now what? How about this one, Seth? This is an NFL.com article written by David Carr, your former teammate.
Oh boy,
Mitchell Trubisky heads the list of most pro-ready QB prospects in 2017 draft.
Did he not have a very promising rookie season?
He did. They made the playoffs.
Bisky.
True.
That's what they called him up there. It was driving your sons crazy.
Dude, it drove them crazy.
Chicago. Their buddies wearing Bisky jerseys.
Best part about this article, day one starter, Mitchell Trubisky. And then the next category, hit or miss, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. I go back. I don't fault anybody for their pre-draft assessment of Pat Mahomes. It was all true. That's the thing, is that every single prospect has pluses and minuses and things that you can worry about. And based on the way that he was allowed to play in college and the offense he was playing in, there were legitimate reasons to be concerned about whether he was going to extend, you know, be able to transfer that to the NFL.
Yeah.
So I don't fault people for those. But the positive over the moon assessments, those are the ones that I'm skeptical of, even if guys work out.
Yeah.
Because you just flat out don't know. You just don't know.
Boy, the other hit or miss in this draft class, Deshaun Watson. What is history going to say about Deshaun Watson's football career? Because he was after his rookie year and his second year, I mean, he was considered a top 20 player in the league, man. And that's just wild. Right now, Watson is wowing everybody with what he does on the board. But what I'm seeing on film is a guy who hasn't done any of that in a game. Now, to your point earlier about Trevor Lawrence, he was running that same offense Trevor Lawrence was running. They really didn't get you ready for the NFL.
Yeah, it's really hard to extrapolate that on it. And, you know, that was one thing that Deshaun was better at in the pre-draft process, too, was the whiteboard stuff than Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
Mahomes had just an air raid education and not nearly to the level of the things that they want you to do in the NFL. Deshaun really put in the work and learned a lot of that stuff. To the point where people were impressed with the work he did on the board. So, yeah, I mean, you just never know, man.
Yeah, man, it's wild. So
Mitchell Trubisky made the Pro Bowl in his second season.
He did. Yeah. I can't remember if it was his rookie year or his second year when they won 12 games with him 1 year. I know that.
It was his second year. They were his record was 11-3.
Yeah, yeah.
And 24 touchdowns to 12 interceptions.
Trubisky, okay, maybe he was pro ready. He just wasn't ready to stay pro ready. He was ready to be pro ready. He just wasn't ready to stay pro ready.
Dude, he had a 71 QBR that year.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's the ESPN one that's on a scale of 0 to 100.
Well,
yeah.
That kind of factors in the running side of it better than obviously the passer rating does.
Yeah.
So like the threat that he had with his legs was a real one.
And you get credit for winning games on that QBR also. It's
promote
not just,
whichever scout said that he was the most pro ready.
There you go. There you go. Well, it was David Carr.
Promote David Carr.
Promote David Carr. Yeah. text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I semi-follow the Panthers podcast, and man, their fan base is split on Bryce Young. Bryce Young might end up being one of those guys that he did some things at the end of the year that were really good under Canales last year after he got benched.
And the feeling at the time by a lot of people was, well, that's it for him. He's done. I think it's kind of like what you see with baseball players. You know, you saw it with Cam Smith. Sometimes with a young guy, you got to sit and let him just make some changes, observe, and then send him back out there. And it worked for Bryce Young.
Yeah.
And this year is a huge year for any third-year quarterback,
no
but
question.
You've seen the highs and lows of Bryce Young.
Yeah.
He's still very, very tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not even fun to hate watch him getting hit.
Yeah.
It's scary. He's so small.
He's very small.
And he's not small the way that, hey, Russell Wilson is short, but he ain't small.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Young's small.
Yeah, he's tiny.
He's delicate looking.
He's tiny. Well, watch him. Watch the videos of him walking into the building for OTAs with his backpack on. He needs to wear a smaller backpack. I haven't seen any videos of him this year, but I remember last year videos of him walking into the building, and he's got a gigantic backpack on that looks like it's about to tip him over or something.
Look at it like a fifth grader with all his textbooks loaded into it.
He's got his Trapper Keeper in the back there and all his pens and pencils. Yeah, yeah.
Fidget toy or whatever they call those things.
Yeah. yes. Bill O'Brien made Watson crazy, LOL. I don't know about that.
Hey, speaking of Deshaun Watson, Shannon Sharpe issued a statement about the allegations that are currently against going. It's way too graphic for us to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting in that he's willing to go places in his public defense that I think some people might have felt like, well, I don't want all my personal business out there. I'm just going to fight this, and people are going to have – I think Shannon Sharpe was like, well, nope, I'm just going to put it all out there. And if somebody thinks less of me for what I might do in my personal time, they're going to damn sure know that it was consensual at least.
Yeah, because the texts are graphic. They're texts from the woman to Shannon about some of the things she wants to do with him.
So
Shannon's a guy who was banging on Instagram Live accidentally, air quotes, 3 months ago. So So, yeah, he's kind of out there. I thought the interesting thing was he pulled the veil right back on Jane Doe, like put her name right in there in the first two sentences of the text.
That's right, yeah.
You know, like I think that's probably if you're denying it, that's probably a tack to take is like, no, she.
Well, and she's not, it's not criminal, right? She's
civil.
It's a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's a lawsuit.
It's a civil suit.
Yeah, it's a civil suit. So, we can.
Nah, we don't need to go there.
No,
it's
I'm not going,
we shouldn't
I'm
have talked about it at this hour anyway.
I'm not going to. Yeah, I'm not going to. I just thought it was interesting. Like he was, and I guess that's what you do. I mean, he was on TV yesterday doing his thing, doing his podcast, doing the whole nine yards.
As far as any kids on the way to school, basically, just a woman says that Shannon Sharp was mean to her, and Shannon Sharp contends that he wasn't.
He was not mean to her. Yeah, exactly. Funny how the experts are wrong on 11 out of 10 picks and still called experts. Someone said that. It's true, man.
Well, part of that, though, too, is that, hey, there's being a GM in general, it's you miss a lot.
Yes.
You whiff a lot. And they're still called GMs, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Got to get a certain amount right. The opportunity cost of swinging on a QB is also you have a Locker or Ponder in the 2011 draft. Throw Blaine Gabbert in there also. That draft class went Jake Locker 8, Tyron Smith 9.
Oh my God.
And then Blaine Gabbert 10, JJ Watt 11, Christian Ponder 12. JJ Watt was sandwiched in between Blaine Gabbert and Christian Ponder in his draft.
It is. It's a huge opportunity cost when you think about, well, even just drafting David Carr, which, you know, most people at the time, and that was before people were really reaching for quarterbacks. Most people didn't really think of David Carr as a slam dunk number one overall pick, but the Texans just, you know, new franchise, let's get a quarterback, let's like try to surround people. And because of that, you passed up
Julius Peppers.
That's right, it was Julius Peppers. You could have had Julius Peppers.
Yeah. Or Joey Harrington with the third pick. That's similar to J.J. Watt. Julius Peppers sandwiched at the top of the draft by David Carr and Joey Harrington out of Oregon. Man, that's a fun class right there. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday here. All right, mock draft injection. We get three more of these between now and the NFL draft on Thursday. Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News will do his mock draft because it gives us an opportunity to hear from Will Anderson about the player that the Texans take.
Ooh.
Also, people got fired up about that trade that you and I read in the mock draft injection yesterday.
Because it was so dumb.
It was so dumb, yeah. Like
we probably didn't do a good enough service as to how dumb it was, but yes.
Yes, yeah. Texans cap and John Harris, not happy with that trade. We'll revisit that, too. We'll do that coming up next. All right, mock draft injection time. The draft is 2 days away, Thursday night. We got you covered here on Sports Radio 610, Thursday, Friday, and all day on Saturday. The Texans sitting on 7 picks right now, including 4 out of the top 89 picks in the draft. So day 2 is the one that's really popping right now. 58th overall pick, 79th overall pick, and the 89th overall pick. Currently still sitting at 25. Every team in the NFL right now is still sitting on their own first round pick. So there have been no picks that were traded in previous years. There's been no movement in the first round so far. We'll see if there's anything. It takes place on draft night. Quarterbacks are a big part of that. We'll talk about that. But let's get to it here. The 25th pick. This is Vinny Iyer of SportingNews.com. This is his latest mock draft. And with the 25th pick in the Vinny Iyer SportingNews.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Tyler Booker, guard.
Oh, big shot.
Alabama, 6'5", 321. The Texans were able to get Cam Robinson to compensate okay, this is Vinny Iyer talking, compensate okay for the surprise trade of Laremy Tunsil, but they still need to address their interior O-line. Booker is a great run-blocking fit with his natural power and quickness.
Yeah, and the biggest concern that people have about Tyler Booker is his athleticism, his overall athleticism. Did not test well at all. He tested abysmally at the combine.
Yeah,
and that, and I would say that he's one of those guys that I think plays above his athleticism through a combination of technique and just good football IQ and physicality. But you can't ignore it, but that's where the difficult decision comes in. I think if he had tested well at the combine, he'd probably be a top 15 pick, which is, this feels like a classic Baltimore Ravens type of move where you take a guy, where you watch the film, you say, all right, I like everything about this guy. Oh, but he didn't test well at the combine. That's all right, Kyle Hamilton. Come on in. We'll take you and just take your actual football playing ability.
Yeah.
The 25th pick overall is a great spot to get a guy like that. That's yes. where the Ravens have done that year Years. After year with in the back half of the first round, mm-hmm. taking guys that play like their top 15 players, but maybe they don't test as well, or they've got some other marks against them. So I was trying to be honest with myself about his athleticism and just, you know, try to check my blind spots. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty comfortable with it. I think you acknowledge that, all right, athletically, maybe it limits you in some things, but I don't think the Texans want to be an outside zone based scheme. I think he just has to be good enough at outside zone runs to function, but it doesn't have to be a staple of what they do.
You know who knows a little something about Tyler Booker? Will Anderson Jr. They were teammates at Alabama. Here was Will Anderson Jr. yesterday at his press conference on Tyler Booker.
Tyler Booker, man, I speak very highly of him, man. Great character guy, but I think he has all the attributes you need to play the offensive line position. He's a mauler. He loves to finish blocks. His leadership skills, his mentality. He wants to be the best, and he's really hard on himself. And, you know, I'm kind of the same way, and that's what builds you up. That's what makes, you know, who you are. And he has all those things, man, and I can't say enough good things about him, man. And wherever he end up, he's going to change that team, change that program, and change the offensive line for sure.
Will Anderson Jr.'s opinion matters, and I don't mean in so much, Seth, as, like, he's going to say, hey, draft Tyler Booker. I'm Will Anderson Jr. I want you to draft this guy. I don't mean that. But Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans don't shy away from the fact that they talk to teammates, former teammates, current teammates, of guys they're looking at to get their take on him. And I can't imagine there's a player in the building whose opinion I'll put CJ and Will together because we're about to hear from CJ on Emeka Ibuka. Those are probably the two most important opinions in the building among players, right?
Well, and this is where it gets really interesting is – yes, I think he checks off all the boxes in terms of character leadership. Ibuka and Tyler Booker, that seems like a slam dunk fit on the character leadership swarm side of
Either
things.
Either one, yeah.
So we talked about how sometimes people skew their judgments based on the combine and workouts and all of that. So I'm always interested when I see guys that were marked for not being that athletic. Like, okay, what were the scouting reports saying before the combine?
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel Jeremiah, who's a former scout for the Ravens, in his mock draft in January. Before there's any workouts or anything,
yep.
he had Tyler Booker going 10th overall to the Bears, saying, I think Booker is one of the safest picks in the draft. He will help firm up the interior offensive line for Caleb Williams. Nary a mention of his awful athleticism or what have you.
Yep.
And likewise, I remember with Josh Connerly, the offensive tackle out of Oregon, before the combine, I saw people say, like, I don't know if he's got a lot of athleticism. And then all of a sudden he goes to the combine, tests really well. I was watching him on film before the combine. I'm like, what? Doesn't have a lot of athleticism. What the hell are they talking about?
Yeah,
the guy
yeah.
moves athletically like Laramie Dam Tunsil.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he tests well at the combine and people are intrigued by his upside. So I didn't see a whole lot of mention about Tyler Booker's awful athleticism until he tested poorly at the combine.
Well, and if there's a team that thinks that the tests that dictate that opinion of his athleticism are kind of bunk, it's the Houston Texans. I think they're at the far end of the scale of teams that aren't really into the drills that are done at the combine.
I think they don't overly weight any of them. I think they're into them. It's that now they also have the GPS data from schools.
Yeah.
So it shows your actual football speed.
Yeah.
And I think they probably lean into those way more.
Definitely.
You know, the value of the combine scores are that it's, you know, by and large, you've got this database of decades of material that you can compare guys against.
Yeah.
So I don't think Caserio completely discounts it, but I do think Caserio would look at if the GPS numbers look a lot different than the testing numbers, he's going to say, okay, well, the GPS numbers really match up with what we see on.
Yeah, that's what he is when he's pulling to go knock a linebacker into the dirt. That's how fast he's running.
There are a lot of super great testers who just don't move that fast on the football
field. Correct,
yeah. And vice versa.
Pads on and everything else. So Emeka Ibuka is gone in this draft. He goes 22 to the Chargers, I believe. But C.J. Stroud, a former teammate of Emeka Ibuka, this was kind of fun yesterday in that we got to talk to some player, you know, talk to Will Anderson Jr. and C.J. Stroud, who were teammates with some of the guys that are earmarked for the Texans at 25. Here was C.J. Stroud on wide receiver Emeka Ibuka.
Yeah, me and Mac, you know, we were very close at Ohio State, you know, and you know, just time goes on, you stay connected, but it's just different, you know, not being in the same building and stuff. But man, I do. He can call me anytime. It's my brother for life, and I'm super proud of him. Just the man he's become, the man of God first and foremost, and just, you know, that leadership that he's brought. And I remember him being like this number one recruiting receiver coming into our school, and like, you know, and he came in with just wanting to work. And so I know that he'll do the same thing, you know, coming to the league, and he's going to have no problem adjusting. I think he's going to be a long-time vet, just somebody who is going to make a lot of plays, reliable, going to block, you know, going to do everything that you ask him to do. But first, you know, he's going to be a leader. And I'm just excited to see, you know, him work out, and G. Scott and Trey, you know, all those guys, you know, JT, Jack, all those guys I was there with, you know, to see them, you know, turning the corner on their college careers. And you know, we're developed there. We're bred there. They teach us a bunch. They're hard on us. You know, the main thing that I remember is just Coach Mick, you know, just being super hard on us in the weight room. But you know, it all pays off in the end. And the same skills that they use at school, like Mech and all those boys, they'll use it in the league and they'll have no problem adjusting.
Mecca, it sounds like Emeka Ebuka is basically the Tyler Booker of the wide receiver position.
Yeah. Now with Ebuka feels more like. It's a weird power ranking there, but I feel like in the power ranking of which guy, based on what people say about him, sounds more like Will Anderson. I feel like Ebuka really sounds like the Will Anderson.
Yeah.
I think Tyler Booker is very well respected and whatever, but it feels like Ebuka, people are really, they're saying it with all their diaphragm.
Yeah.
They're saying like, this guy's just different. He's just different.
You think they have Ebuka higher up the board than most teams do, the Texans, based on stuff like that?
Probably with Ebuka and Booker and various other guys, I think there are some teams that genuinely value the football character side of things. Every team talks about it, yeah, and says we want smart, tough, dependable guys. I think especially since D'Amico came in, that they 100% really try to live by their own doctrine.
Yep.
And like Nick the other day said, that their draft board is probably smaller than a lot of other teams. I think they elevate some guys more than other teams based on football character. And then I think they take some guys off their board based on sketchy reports.
I watched some of Chris Ballard's press conference yesterday, the GM in Indianapolis. He said that they, you know, there's 257 picks in the draft. He said their big board is somewhere between 150 and 175 players.
Yeah,
you know, so most teams don't have nearly as many players on their board as there are picks in the draft.
Yeah, and you know? That's why sometimes you start to see the really funky stuff happen in the back half of the draft, where there's a lot of teams that are like, yeah, great. Yeah,
I have to use this pick here?
I have to sign him to a guaranteed rookie contract, where I'd prefer to get him as a college free agent.
Agent. Yep.
Great.
Yep. Yep. If you're wondering why seventh round picks get used as filler to move up and up in the first couple days of the draft.
But it is, I mean, everybody's boards are different.
Sure.
So it's not like there's everybody that just feels like they're destitute at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the Ballard is the only one I've ever heard give a number as far as how many players are on their board. I wonder if the Texans are even smaller than that. You know,
Ballard also said that both his quarterbacks will probably play meaningful roles.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Year.
Pettycast. Oh, I've got that good. Here. Don't worry. Yeah, don't worry. We've got a little Chris Ballard for you coming up next. Speaking of which, the Pettycast. We do it every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. What are the things that I'm petty about, Seth's petty about, people around sports are petty about? Text yours in, 713-572-4610. Tuesday Pettycast coming up next.